Hi, I'm Isabel.
And I'm Hope, and you're listening to Far Beyond,
the podcast where we dive into enigmatic stories from the past.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. We're very happy to have you for this episode. I am Hope, like I said, and we have Isabel, and we are remote recording again, and boop, I will boop. Be hosting this episode. Yes. It feels like we're together, though, thanks to the advancements of technology. Like, we're face-to-face drinking
thanks,
tea.
Thanks, Steve Jobs.
Fire in the background. Yes, thanks, Steve. I love you.
Pal Steve.
Now we're just using his technology to make artwork. But, yeah, have you been well, my friend Isabel?
I have been well. Have you been well, my friend Hope?
Lovely. Well, I wanted to delve into the woods today. And talk about a story you're very familiar with, but you might not be familiar with where it came from and how true it actually is. So it's a fairy tale, believe it or not. And I want to talk about why we have fairy tales and why so many people really love that genre of story and why they've stuck with us for so long. So psychologists from Sigmund Freud to Carl Jung to Bruno Bettelheim have proposed ideas that fairy tales teach children how to look at unconscious ideas. And psychoanalysis says that the characters within each one of these fairy tales communicate to children an understanding of universal problems. And some say that they're meant to teach us about how to behave, to model morality off of the protagonists in them, because the good guys always get to ride off into that ever-distant, happily ever-after horizon. And then another theory says that fairy tales are meant to teach empathy. As in reading or listening, the audience takes part in communal bonding, and they find connection and relationships with the characters themselves. And perhaps these stories do that for certain people at certain places and certain times, but there's a more universal element within the fairy tale that links them all together, and that's that they're all fantastically improbable, illogical, and super wonderful. Because they're not bound by physics or modern culture or death or time, the impossible usually is possible in these stories. So if you're an imaginative person, you're going to love the creative problem solving that you have in fairy tales. And then also, the world is so weird today that I think that even though these stories are strange, they're more pertinent than ever. So so in honor of, like, you know, just the melting ice and the singing birds of spring, I wanted to introduce us to the Grimm's version of Snow White. So I'm going to read like the opening lines, and then I'll kind of just give like a quick synopsis of the story, because everybody's familiar with it. So I give you Little Snow White. Once upon a time, in midwinter, when the snowflakes were falling like feathers from heaven, a queen sat sewing at her window, wishing for a daughter, and she pricks her finger, and three drops of blood fall on the white snow against that ebony frame of the window, and she's like, oh, I will name you Snow White. So that's kind of why we have that name, Snow White, because she has red lips, and her hair is as black as that ebony wood, and it was snowing, so that's kind of like that color sort of deal. And then, of course, her mother dies, the evil stepmother comes in, and she is very vain, and she has this wonderful mirror, and she's always like, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? Yes. And then the mirror will respond, oh, it's you, of course. But one day it responds, you, my queen, are fair, it's true, but Snow White is 1,000 times fairer than you. And that sets her off. She's like, okay, I don't care if she's a child. I'm going to murder her. So she tells her huntsman, go kill this little thing in the woods and don't tell my husband about it. He'll get upset. And the huntsman's like, okay, I don't have a choice. I have like a 401k, my pension's like set up on here, so I'll go murder your
Gotta do it for the money. Cool. Yeah,
Yeah, so he goes and he almost kills her, but a boar runs by and he takes pity and he's like, okay, I'll just kill the boar and I'll take its heart and show that to the queen as proof that I've killed Snow White. And so he does that and Snow White is terrified. She runs through the woods. She finds a house. And of course, you know, the little dwarves are living in it and they just love her so much and they try to defend her. But the queen finds out through her magic and she tries to kill her with a corset and then she tries to kill her with a comb. Home. And then finally she brings this beautiful apple that's half white and half red, and she takes a bite of the white half and she's like, okay, see, it's safe, try this other half. And for some reason Snow White, being like innocent and yeah. wonderful, she's like, oh yeah, I'll try, like, the other half of it.
That's not suspicious at all.
Yeah, I love that this old lady just came and she offered me an apple, but she
it's not weird that they're two different colors and she took a bite of the white half.
I want the red color. So she eats that and, you know, chokes on it and is put in a glass coffin. The dwarves are very sad. The prince comes and wants to take her back because he recognizes her. And as he's moving her, the apple is dislodged. And they kind of figure out that it was the queen who was trying to kill her. So at their wedding day, they force the queen to put on red hot iron slippers and dance into the forest. And it's like, oh, oof. Okay, if the shoe fits, wear it. So, anyways,
I love
lots
those
of
red
moral
hot iron
things.
Slippers.
Yeah, it's a really
the Grimm brothers.
Really beautiful story, definitely. Yeah, a bit violent, a bit saucy, lots of heat in it. It's one of my favorites for sure. It was like one of the first Disney movies I ever watched too. So I was like, I want to read more about this. So the setting, Isabel, when we enter Snow White, those first lines take us into that wonderful world. We're struck by the beauty of the land, the feather-like snow, the bright colors, and then that poignant prick of the finger, which plays a catalyst-like role in another story that we were talking about. I think you can remember what happens with that. And we can do that on another episode too. And then magic and shadow are thrown in as Loving Queen dies, and then the evil stepmother comes in with her mysterious mirror, and then Snow White is forced into those dark woods. And so we're transported into like this mirror world of our own reality, and it's familiar enough to connect to, yet it's strange enough to let us like start to have more questions. And then luck, coincidence, and fate make an appearance as that boar runs in just as she's about to be killed by the huntsman, and it saves Snow White. And it's like, okay, we see this a lot in stories where nature kind of comes in as this like random sort of omnipresent savior, like guiding force for people who are like good and innocent and pure. So she runs through the dark woods where she finds the house with seven of everything. And seven is like a super special number in fairy tales. So it adds to this coincidental poetry of the story. So the number of dwarves adds this overarching feeling of magic to the story of Snow White. So while she's living in happiness in their cottage, the jealousy of the queen leads her to, you know, try to murder Snow White three times, the corset, the comb, and the apple. And so that half red, half white apple is like super symbolic because we have that color red, because red is representational, especially in traditional stories of sin, lust, promiscuity. Little Red Riding Hood, her cape has been thought to represent her loss of innocence as she travels through the danger and the darkness of the forest where she meets the wolf. And then there's this other fairy tale called The Red Shoes by Hans Christian Andersen, and the red symbolizes the little girl's lack of humility in it because she chooses to wear red shoes to church instead of her normal black ones, and then she's punished by a dancing curse which makes her dance until she dies because she wore those shoes which were red. So yeah, a pretty intense sort of punishment for that sort of thing, but it just shows you how like just those colors and clothing traces back in the day were much more significant than they are now. So it makes sense that the red side of the apple would not only be the tastier side, as red is linked to like appetite, because you look at a lot of fast food branding schemes and they have red in it, but it's also linked to risk, and hence the poison is hidden in that side. So yeah. So when you're also looking at the number seven, it helps to look at where the fairy tale developed. And Little Snow White was first published by the Brothers Grimm in 1812. And the tale itself is, of course, older, but the one we know today, the one that was popularized in, like, Disney, came from Germany. So there may be an actual real-life inspiration for Snow White. And that tale is concerning royalty and drama and all the elements of an outlandish fantasy story. So there's three ideas that scholars have put forward that could have kind of like inspired the story of Snow White as all we right. have it today. What I want to do is go ahead and give you a variant of Snow White in the Scottish version, just so you know how like universal the tale is. And in the Scottish variation, it's called Gold Tree and Silver Tree. And the Queen Silver Tree consults a trout who can tell her who is the fairest in the land in place of a mirror. And it answers Las Erdwig, which means Flame of the Branches, her stepdaughter, who must then flee, which we've seen this before. And then this girl takes refuge with 13 cats who are actually an enchanted prince and his squires in disguise. I know, it happens to all of us at one point or another.
Yeah, we've all been there.
And so, of course, you know, she falls in love with the prince and they try to marry, but the queen sends three ice giants who trap Flame in a death-like frozen state. So the prince kind of gives up on her. He's like, shoot, that sucks, but I need to find somebody else who's not frozen and half dead. So he remarries, and then his second wife actually saves Flame. She comes back and melts her and kind of like cures her of the evil of the queen. And I actually like that Scottish version because it's like, oh, there's a female heroine and she decided to go back for the first wife of, you know, her husband and save her. So there's a lot of different like examples of Snow White showing up. But let me give you a theory, one theory that says this is what Snow White originated from. And it's from a story from Ovid's Metamorphoses called Chione. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's C-H-O-I-N-E. And it means snow in Greek. So we have that first initial connection there. And she's described as the most beautiful woman in the land in this story. And as such, Apollo and Hermes completely fall in love with her, which is pretty typical of these gods in this pantheon.
Yeah.
And so this sort of like lust led Hermes to put Chione to sleep, and then he ends up sleeping with her, you know, against her will, kind of like in Sleeping Beauty. And then, of course, Apollo gets jealous, so later on he disguises himself as an old crone, almost like the evil queen did, and then he approaches Chione and sleeps with her again. I don't know if this is against her will or not. Usually it is against her will, so that's just how those stories go back then. And these two encounters led Chione to actually openly boast that she was more beautiful than the goddess Diana and everything. So it's like, oh, you're proud of these happenings or something like that. And then this angers Diana, and Diana then shoots Chione through the tongue with an arrow. So, you know, we get a lot of violence. Aim. Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. And so it's kind of different from Snow White because the girl who is Snow White gets punished in the end versus, like, the evil queen. Because I feel like Diana would be the evil queen in this story. So some scholars think that this was, like, the loose inspiration for Snow White as we have it today.
Interesting.
Yes. The next one is a real-life story. The German scholar Eckhard Sander wrote a book called Snow White, Is It a Fairy Tale?, in which he proposes that Snow White originated from the life of a 16th century countess named Marguerite von Waldeck. She was very beautiful, and she came from the town of Burgfreiheit, which was known for its copper mines. So this German scholar states that the workers, who were often children, suffered from stunted growth due to the lack of food and fresh air. And were allegedly referred to as dwarves, as like a condescending thing, because they were super poor and couldn't afford enough food, so therefore they were put into this horrible labor condition, and they lived in groups in single room houses, which is just automatically like, oh, okay. So this is where this is. Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, oh, ouch, no child labor laws back then. So this countess who was benefiting from this mining industry fell in love at the age of 16 with Philip II of Spain. So very rich, very powerful person. But for political reasons, a lot of people were like, no, this marriage is not going to ever happen. And she was poisoned at a very young age. even though, you know, she was very beautiful and very supposedly sweet. So, of course, that kind of falls in line with the Grimm's retelling of Snow White. And the German village of Berkeleyheit has residents who are so convinced that their home was the inspiration for Snow White that they've changed the name to Schneewittchendorf. Schneewittchendorf. I don't speak German. So Schneewittchendorf translates to Snow White's village in English. And you can actually visit it in Germany because it lies below the city of Bremen, 2 hours south as the crow flies, or 3 hours should a car arrive. And Bremen is another home place for a fabulous musical fairy tale. But I regress. That's for a different day. So you can visit Snow White's supposed town of origin. Yes. And wow. I'm just like, oh gosh, there's a lot of darkness inherent within that, you know what I mean? Just with like the poison and the child labor, I'm not really digging it, but it sounds horribly likely in a very dark way.
Yeah.
So theory number three, this next one takes place in 1729 in Lohr, Bavaria. The Baroness Maria Sophia von Oertel was beautiful, gorgeous, and had a loving father who was incredibly wealthy, and he owned a castle that today is still a museum you can go and visit, and super renowned for its beauty. So Maria's mother dies, and her father remarries a countess named Claudia Elizabeth Maria von Richtenstein. And like Claudia already, I'm just like, oh, that doesn't sound like a nice name. Sorry if your name is Claudia, but I'm just like, if you're going to be a villain, I think like Claudia is like,
yeah.
So she disliked her stepchildren. She had two of her own. She was super in favor of them getting more money. She obviously didn't want to like help her stepchildren and was kind of evil. And the region of Lohr, Bavaria had a reputation for the mirrors produced at that time. And so Countess Claudia, and mirrors back then, you have to keep in mind, super expensive, super difficult to make. It's not like you could just go get one today, especially a good one, one that was
that like, you could candid, actually that would see actually your reflection reflect. And
yes, exactly. So, you know, and also mirrors are like really magical too. So Countess Claudia had one of these, and she brought them to the castle. She brought her favorite one to the castle, and it was referred to as the talking mirror because it always told the truth, because it was so like perfectly reflective that what it would reflect wasn't distorted by like discoloration or anything. And it was so prized that it's still held in this castle. The Spessart Museum is what it's called today, but you can still go and see this mirror that supposedly is the evil mirror. It's an artifact of the craftsmanship and possible magic of those 18th century mirror makers in Bavaria. And one other thing too, the dwarves in Margaret's story in Bavaria were also said to have been inspired by a town nearby the castle called Bieber, which is set among seven mountains. Absolutely gorgeous. And then the smallest tunnels can only be accessed by tiny bodies. So guess what? Aww. Let's get some children again. And they wore bright... Yes. And so get this. They wore bright cloaks, though, Isabel, to be seen in the dark.
Oh, that's really cute, actually.
All right, Charlie, here you go. Wear this bright green little hood and go get the gemstone. It was like a copper and a gemstone mine. So set among seven mountains, they're using kids in bright cloaks to go down and like work in these little holes.
So they
holes.
Can spot them. Oh, my God.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, Lohr is famous for the glass that it makes, and that could inspire Snow White's glass coffin. And there was also a lot of deadly nightshade that grew in that area. So that's another linkage to all to, of like, the poison that the queen used against her. So I'm just like, oh my God, there's so many things. There's so many like women in history who have lived lives that are very similar to Snow White. You know what I'm saying? And like, that's kind of devastating because it's a beautiful, wonderful story when Disney wraps it up and it's like, it'll all turn out happily ever after. And there's like music to go along and they burst into song
and she's
randomly.
Wishing in a well. And
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But when you realize like, oh, poison and forbidden love and jealousy and evil stepmothers
and also like
all the time.
And so many of these stories, like even going back to like the Greek, like women are always just at the brunt of it, like, you know, And it's just like they're going through all this tragedy and getting poisoned and being kicked out of their homes for just being feminine and beautiful.
And it's really sad because in the Roman story, the Chion story, it's like this woman who is kind of attacked by Apollo and Hermes was then attacked by Diana. And there's a lot of infighting going on between females in like a lot of these variations of Snow White. It's like jealousy and hate. So that is like really depressing. Like it is sort of a dark story because it really talks about like things that all females sort of go through and something that kind of transcends different cultures because a lot of people connect to these stories. Because it's, you know, it's just, and it's also an allegory that, like, for a personal story.
That thing of just like the, not even so much like the competition, but like the pressure that's been present in like society going back so far of needing to be like.
You mean like losing beauty?
Yeah. And like being beautiful. And even with the evil queen, like she's threatened by Snow White because. Currency in a weird way and
worth and then, for sure, like she wouldn't have gotten to the point she was at.
She wasn't the fairest in the land that beauty.
And because her magic mirror, it's like that's kind of the only thing she uses it for in the story. Maybe that's all magic mirrors can do. I don't own one personally. Maybe they can just compare your
mine
beauty.
Was a really bad one, so I don't know.
They just like broadcast like local sports networks and you're like no. But so the whole thing is like, so her like mirrors, I think, are just implicitly, they're linked to narcissism because you see yourself reflected in it. It's like if you're buying mirrors, if you're gazing into mirrors, you're likely doing it because you enjoy what you see. That's a logical thing. Like you enjoy being able to see
your reflection yourself. And
look back. Yeah, your being, your essence is doubled within the mirror, and it makes a huge role in Snow White because without the mirror she would have never known. She would have been in ignorant bliss. But she puts the whole everything
into her,
like the whole reason she does what she does is because of what the mirror says. So it's like, okay, this thing is like super powerful and it just automatically states the truth. But even though it states that truth, the queen doesn't really stand to lose anything. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, until she dies, until the king dies, she won't have any power. It doesn't matter how beautiful she is. She's still not going to rule the country.
Yeah.
You know? Like, she's just going to... It'll likely be a king who rules it. So that's sort of why it's like you're just doing this out of, like, hate and spite and irrational fear of losing, like, your youth.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's... I suppose better than being like a sorceress who can use magic, or maybe she's just an herbalist who's really good with poison, but it's like that should be enough, man. Like you're set up, you have a castle, you know, like I don't know. So it's just like it is interesting that there is this like blatantly misunderstood evil person.
Yeah. And it is like,
and I would love if they did a remake of Snow White, but from the perspective of the evil queen, like Maleficent.
Oh yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, dark story, but I just really like the fact that there's a couple, you know, it's really easy to find things that have happened in history in real women who have gone through something very Snow White-esque. So, you know, knowing the version you know of Snow White, do you think it was inspired? Like, do you think it goes way back to, like, more of an archetypal Greek myth sort of thing? Mm. Or do you think it was more of, like, a literal tabloid where,
it was like,
you know, people knew about this crazy story of this duchess getting murdered, and then it was like a game of telephone until the Brothers Grimm got a hold of it from, like, some old lady, and they're like,
well, all right, we got down. This
But
one.
There were no specific names.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. What else? Because, like, I think... It's hard because, like, I feel like it could have been both. Like, I feel like character archetypes, like, have been formed, you know what I mean? Like, going so far back of, like, oh, the pretty maiden. Like, that is definitely derived from, like, some sort of Greek myth. Or,
evil, it's like a Joseph Campbell style
myth.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, there's, like, those archetypes that have been formed going back to, like, Roman, Greek times and, like, characters and
stories.
But you
have to keep in mind, though... We're talking specifically about the Brothers Grimm 1812 Snow White, which was published in Germany. And so you have the Roman myth, and then you have the first one, which was about the girl from Germany who fell in love with Philip of Spain. So that took place in Germany in the Schneewittchenland, which is, you know, south of Bremen. So that's physically in Germany. And the other one takes place in Bavaria.
And what was the, like, time frame? What was the one in Germany? Wow.
The Bavaria one was 1729. So that's, you know, kind of like a century, less than a century, but around a century before the Grimms wrote it down. And then when was the other one? I should know this. But I want to say that it was like, oh, maybe the 1600s. I think it was the 1600s, so a little bit earlier. A little bit earlier, yeah. So it would have had time. They both would have had plenty of decades to, you know, simmer
And become a little bit
legend and myth. Yeah, yeah. And they're both geographically close because you have the real town. You have the real town, and then you also have that real castle where the mirror is still housed. So
I feel like it's the mirror one. Locations. Something in me and the bright little cloaks of these little kids. I think really sold it to me. And the fact they're going into mines with colorful little hoods.
I'm going to side with you too. I really do think that it's the Bavarian one. I mean, you know, just because, like, also there's a gemstone mine. Yeah. And if you remember that scene from the Disney movie, like, that's one of the best songs when they're like, hi-ho, hi-ho.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's just so fun. I think I know our outro song. Hopefully that's legal. Thanks, Disney. Yeah, but it's just like, bright cloaks and poisonous flowers and, you know, gemstone mining. The other story, it was just a copper mine. So, and seven mountains.
Seven mountains.
The town is set within There's seven mountains. There's a mirror. Mountains. Like, how like does that happen?
The mirror bit is kind of crazy, too.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. And I actually posted a photograph of that mirror on the Instagram, and I'm going to post more pictures of, like, the castle in the town as well, because it really, Bavaria is, like, the place for fairy tales. It's where Ludwig built his, it's so picturesque and just weirdly, it reminds me of the Sleepy Hollow episode where we hear these stories and then we're like, oh, and then they actually are happening over there.
That's kind of like, when we did the Sleepy Hollow episode and we were talking about it, we're like, oh, this could be a fairy tale. It could literally, maybe that's what the Brothers Grimm did, you know? They heard the story and
they're like, this is so
And then
outlandish.
They wrote about it,
Nobody's
yeah.
gone through this. Nobody will believe it. We have to put it under the fairy tale genre, otherwise they're just going to laugh at us. So, yes. What if the Grimm, like, collection of fairy tales was just, like, kind of covered up camouflage tabloid stuff that was really just commentary
that would be cool.
on what kings and queens and
we're getting up to at the time.
Yeah. Kind of like a political commentary where it's like, oh, yeah, so, you know, this is obviously, the wolf is obviously just an illusion for this dude who's horrible and mean.
Yeah.
And, you know, just making fun of, like, actual people. Because Snow White definitely was, like, even if it wasn't based on these specific humans, it is just so close that I'm going to decide that it was for my personal benefit. And to stick with the theme, too, we, of course, have the evil queen. We have the evil countess. So she is, in a way, a sorceress, a witch, and they always make it into one of these episodes.
It's not a far beyond episode without a witch.
Nope. They're in here. They're always in here somewhere, meandering around. But so that was the tale of Snow White. Now you guys know next time you go to watch it, it is much more visceral than the cartoon makes it out to be. But
all that time she's
said,
singing, she's going through
true.
It.
Exactly. Yes, it's more of a documentary film done in cartoon style, I would say, than a cartoon done after a fairy tale story, but that's just my professional researcher opinion. So I'm gonna leave it at that. But thank you for joining me today, Isabel.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for listening, everyone. Check us out on Instagram at FarBeyondPod.
And send us an email if you have something important to add or if we were horribly wrong about some information on the podcast. It's FarBeyondPod@gmail.com. Have a magical day, people.